Welcome to Fusion Fantasy Football. Welcome, everybody. It's Joshua. How y'all doing? You ready? You probably had some drafts already. Probably have some drafts coming up. I wanted to get this out in time to help you at least a little bit. So what we're doing today is something that I actually did in two episodes last season, but we kind of got condensed. And to stay on schedule here, because guess what? It's coming fast. Next week is next week tonight, week one. Yes, next week tonight, the show I do during the season where I will be talking about players to add, trades to make. I'll be targeting streamers for the following weekend. Not the one that's playing this week, but the week after. And so we do week one before week one has even been played. Okay. And then after week one, we will be doing week three. And that makes no sense, because what happened to week two? Well, because the episode I do before week one is a week one and week two. So I really should call it week one. I should call it week two. But then people say, what happened to week one? Well, week one is kind of tonight's episode. So tonight's episode, we're going to be digging into values for the draft and this was two separate episodes last year, but costly mistakes. And that episode last year, if you just listen to costly mistakes episode like 3 weeks before the season last year and listen to me and avoided the players that I said to avoid, which are far, far fewer number than the players I like, okay? That's just kind of a general philosophy where you don't want to shut yourself off to a large pool of the players, but you really want to be picky about which ones you don't want and just avoid those. And if you had listened to me last year, you would have avoided guys like Josh Jacobs, things like that. So we're going to kind of do it all in one tonight, and we're going to do it through the lens of the high ground draft strategy. All right, so that's what we're going to be getting into in the meat and potatoes of tonight's episode. Be sure to check out the website, fusionffb.com. Go there, download the Singularity. It's in the spreadsheet format for Excel only, but you can use Excel mobile for free. Download it. Download the file, Singularity, open it, and you will have full usability, functionality, everything's there. And it runs pretty quick, pretty smooth, even with all the data and everything I have. It's really optimized pretty well, at least on my Android, so can't speak for you iPhones out there. But anyway, and then of course, if you have it on PC, it'll open easy, but I know that that's a paid program, but it's awesome that the mobile version is actually free. So it's kind of a cheat, it's kind of a workaround. So there you go. You can also download the PDF, which if you already downloaded, I apologize. The people responsible for editing and publishing the PDF have been fired. I have replaced them. And it will not be missing any pages this time. So sorry about that. I think the C's, like Cleveland and Cincinnati, and I think they were missing. Not sure if there was anything else, but yeah, it was kind of funny. There was a couple things that were not in there that were supposed to be. So sorry about that. If you're looking through the PDF, it will be corrected by the time you're listening to this. So go right now, fusionffb.com, download the free Singularity. It's rankings, it's a draft kit, it's a draft guide. Speaking of draft guide, I couldn't help myself. I added something else. So it's basically the ADP beater. It looks a lot like the ADP beater, which if you're more familiar with it, it looks a lot like the format beater. But what the draft guide is meant to do is instead of the ADP beater, it listed the players according to ADP's rank, and it listed them in order according to ADP. And then it told you where I actually thought they would finish, and so on. Well, the draft guide is putting them in the singularities order, which, don't forget, on the spreadsheet, customizable scoring, it's half PPR by default. So if you have that PDF version, this sheet is great to print out, right? So you go to the sheet, you print it out, nice landscape view, you take it to your draft, or even if you have an online draft, you can just be scratching off players. What it does is it lists the players according to the singularities ranking, not according to ADP, but it does tell you what their, you know, positional rank according to ADP, their overall ADP, and then it tells you their positional value. So it's, if it's a positive number, and I'm going to be referencing this as we go through the players that are values and players that are mistakes, we're going to be referencing this plus and minus. So for a quick example, I have Tom Brady in 6-point touchdown, passing touchdown leagues as my quarterback 4. Yeah, I know. That's 5 higher than the ADP, which says quarterback 9. Now, that's really a lot closer according to 4-point passing touchdown. So again, it really does matter that you set that custom scoring. Again, default on the PDF is half PPR, 6-point passing touchdown. And that's so that when you go and look at all the ranks and everything, you can see that versus regular PPR and 4-point passing touchdown. So, all right. So, breaking news. All right. So, guys, if you didn't hear about it, Travis Etienne out for the season. I hadn't had a chance to react before this. And I have mixed feelings. I mean, well, not really mixed. It's a shame. It really is. I was not, as much as I talked up James Robinson, I was not an Etienne hater. I really liked his profile. I hated where he went. I hated how it looked like they were going to be using him if you just looked at the evidence. At the same time, and I hated that he had to compete with James Robinson. I had James Robinson running back 20, and I had Travis Etienne as running back 23. I essentially treated them as a Chubb Hunt light, right? Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, the diet version, okay, right? And I think that's actually a really good comparison. That's what I was expecting to see. Now that Travis Etienne is gone, we will never get to see how that exactly would have played out. Maybe we'll see it next year, but that's another time. For now, we have to decide what to do with James Robinson. I continue to say that a lot of people were making a mistake. And I already had this on my sheet to talk about before the injury. I have the, you know, the revision logs on Google Sheets to prove it. I did want to talk about how we use draft capital. We use a lot of arguments that are really familiar to us. And we have to be careful that we don't just slip into using them blindly without really looking at the situation and making sure it applies, or that it applies as strongly as we're used to it. And I kind of compare this to, we had Peter Howard on in the offseason and was talking to him about his projections and formulas and how you really got to know what they do so that you can apply them correctly. You know, if you know that your model, my model, likes adjusted age and college season adjusted metrics, then you're going to know that it's not really going to like Najee Harris, right? Because he was older. So it's not going to give him bonus points for doing it at a young age like someone like Cam Akers did, right? Jonathan Taylor even. Even Travis Etienne is not going to give Najee Harris bonus points for that. And I have to understand that then when I go to do my rankings, that Najee Harris is not going to come out as a running back one according to my model before draft capital, right? Because it doesn't like him and who he is as an older prospect. But I know how my model works, and I know what it's doing, and so I know I can't just look at its low rank and say, wow, I guess Najee Harris is no good. No, I know what it's doing, and I know what to listen to, what to look at, and what not to. Okay, so similarly, for any argument, you need to understand how it actually works and what it's actually doing if you want to apply it to a new situation or a different situation, just to make sure that it actually applies. And so what happens with draft capital is it works really, really, really well, especially for running backs. Do you know why it works so well, especially for running backs? Because running backs are particularly situation dependent. Okay, this was an argument I've already been made. If you've listened to my debate with Josh Larkey about Bateman ETN, right? You heard a little bit of this. The situation matters for running back more than the draft capital. And the reason is that the draft capital is describing the situation. That's right. We are typically used to seeing the draft capital pretty accurately representing the situation. When the Cowboys draft Zeke, I can't remember, what was it? Three or four. Top pick, very high. We know what the situation is. They don't have a starting running back. They really want one. We understand all of these things, and you know that you understand these nuances because it's the difference from why we're treating ETN and Najee Harris, even though they're only a couple picks away, right? Well, usually if we were just going by raw draft capital, we wouldn't be giving Najee Harris that much more benefit than ETN was. However, everyone knows the situations are very different. The draft capital spent on Najee Harris is much more typical for the draft capital for the situation that he's in Pittsburgh. They needed a starting running back to play a lot, so they drafted a running back with a first round pick. That is a typical situation for first round draft capital. Do you know what's not a typical situation for first round draft capital? Jacksonville. Oh, you know what else isn't a typical situation? Something like Sony Michel going to the Patriots in the first. That's weird. Rashad Penny. Oh, and Chris Carson just had a great season. Your sixth, seventh rounder, whatever he was, right? Those are the weird situations. The normal situations are the Zeke's, right? The Saquon Barkley, Najee Harris, situations where it's clear they want a starting running back, so let's bring in this guy. And we also understand that that's why later draft capitals come with some uncertainty. No one was doubting or is doubting that Melvin Gordon and Javonte Williams will be competing with each other for time there. And probably Javonte is going to have to take that job from Melvin Gordon. It's already Melvin Gordon's. Why do we accept this? Why aren't we saying, well, draft capital, therefore Javonte must be the starter? Because he doesn't have first round draft capital, because that does not represent and describe the situation in Denver. They have Melvin Gordon, so they spent a second. I can't remember off the top of my head. I should have had that ready. Wasn't planning on talking about him. But as an example, his later draft capital shows us a little bit more about the situation, right? And so when we're talking about Jacksonville, all along I said, this is not a typical first round situation. So I am not going to give it typical first round draft capital projection in points, in usage. I'm not. And everyone knew this. Everyone knew Travis Etienne was not getting Najee Harris volume. And that's what frustrates me so much about these things, is that it's stuff that we all already know. We're just failing to follow through with the process. I understand the idea is, well, he's just not going to get it right away. He'll slowly take it over. Again, you are applying a model to a situation that does not compare. And every time I bring this up, everyone talks about all these situations with, oh, well, this running back, this Carlos Hyde, this Carlos. No, guys, none of those situations compare, because a first rounder was used on a running back to replace an old or failed running back incumbent. There's neither old or failed running back incumbent in Jacksonville. No, there's a shining success in James Robinson. I'm sorry, he is not comparable. The closest comparables are if you treat Chris Carson, if you treat late round and UDFA running backs similarly, right? Chris Carson would be the similarity. Now that Travis Etienne has gotten injured, even more so of a similarity. We also have situations such as, I think it was Buffalo, Fred Jackson, and CJ Spiller. We also have situations like, oddly enough, Arian Foster, right? 2009 or something. And the next year they draft Ben Tate anyway in the second round. Did that become anything? No, Arian Foster didn't give up that job. So again, we have to look at the situations and be a little bit more nuanced. Don't fall into well-worn arguments as though they were ruts. And this can apply to all kinds of things. Draft capital. It can apply to breakout age, right? We could falsely say someone's not going to be good and ignore, you know, maybe they're just a different situation. They broke out a little bit older. That happens. We have to be willing to be nuanced and allow for anomalies, outliers to happen. Use the data, use the information in context, use draft capital, you know, properly. All right. And a lot of smart analysts did their followers a disservice this offseason by not only not encouraging them to draft James Robinson, but discouraging them to draft James Robinson, even at a great value, when, like I said, it was clearly going to be a shared workload. We'll never know that for sure. Now that Travis Etienne is hurt, but unfortunately, I am still hearing many analysts continue to fade James Robinson. And with a lot of arguments that I think are very poor, I'm hearing arguments such as, well, the passing offense is going to improve. You can't expect James Robinson to get his target volume again. What? I can't expect James Robinson to do better than tied for fifth for the most targets on a bad team, because that's what James Robinson was. He was tied with Tyler Eifert for 60 targets last season. Fifth, tied for fifth. So there were five other players on a bad Jacksonville Jaguars team that had as many or more targets as James Robinson. If you ask me, that can improve. And I haven't projected to improve in targets. And you say, oh, but his rushing volume was just way too high. There's no way he's going to get that much of the share. Oh, I agree. He's probably not going to get that much of the share. They have Carlos Hyde there, who's more capable. But with any kind of increase in passing game, that's obviously going to bring more points. But let's say that even just stays the same. What if Jacksonville just rushes more? Because they were league, I can't remember if they were the last or second to last most rush attempts in the league. 337. That's it. 337. I think It's possible. I'd have to double check, pause this. Derrick Henry got more than that himself. All right. He ran the ball more times than the entire Jacksonville team combined. So, point being, if that moves up to more of a league average of 440, 420, well, James Robinson can have the exact same number, the quantity, not the share, not the percentage, but the quantity of rushes that he had last year at a lower share, at a more normal 60-70% share. He could still rush well over 200 times with a 60% share. Are you understanding? We'd really dig into the numbers. I know people don't like to dig into the numbers. They say they hate math and all this stuff. But when you really dig into it, you can understand that these narratives don't actually make sense. If the offense improves, James Robinson improves. I was told all offseason that DeAndre Swift is not going to be good because he's on a bad offense in the Detroit Lions. And bad offenses don't have top running backs finishing on them very often. This is what I was told for months in the offseason. But now that James Robinson, who was on a bad team last year and was running back 7 despite it, now that they're anticipating the passing game improving, I'm being told that that's going to hurt James Robinson. Guys, these are incoherent, or at least inconsistent, arguments. And I know they're not necessarily being all made by the same exact people, so I'm not saying individuals are inconsistent or hypocritical. I am saying that you really need to either pick one, or, like I would say, it's more nuanced than that. There's plenty of good players that have come from bad teams. Like 2 to 3 of the top 12 typically do come from bottom teams, just like they did last year. It happens all the time. So you really need to be, again, more nuanced and understand that when people talk about the volume that James Robinson had last year, once again, I've said this so many times, he had very high share, but the pie can simply increase, his share can go down, but the quantity, the actual numbers from which we get actual fantasy points, can stay the same. James Robinson is a top 10 running back once again. Top 12 is what I should have said. I think he will be top 10. I do fear Urban Meyer and that whole situation, but the thing about Urban Meyer is we figured he'd run the ball, but it might be a little bit more efficient. So we might be looking at more like Joe Mixon early in the season last year, which was great. Inefficient, very inefficient, but great. And so that's what might be what we're looking at here for James Robinson. All right, so take advantage of the fact that people are being slow to adjust right now. Remember when Daryl Henderson did not skyrocket up ADP boards into the second round for running backs just because Cam Akers was hurt? That was because a lot of people, I think, in the back of their mind were hesitant. They thought maybe the Rams would add someone. And of course they did. They traded for Sony Michel, which, funnily enough, I predicted July 20th. I predicted that, I guess it's not a really projection. I said it in a funny way. I said, who's going to be surprised when the Patriots trade Sony Michel to the Rams for a 6th? Not me. So that was a lot of fun. I was just having laughs with it. It made sense, more sense, right after the Cam Akers injury and we were hearing about Patriots want to get rid of a Sony. It made complete sense. There was a lot of people who made the similar conclusion in the following days. I think I hit on it like right after, like that, the day of the news about Cam Akers. I was on Clubhouse talking with the people and it just kind of popped in my head as an idea. But the funny thing is, this doesn't change Henderson's value that much because it was down low because people were hesitant to shift. They have learned in the past the mistake of overreacting to this, and they saw how shallow the depth was on the Rams and that they were going to be adding somebody. Surely they had to add somebody, right? And they did. And it's actually harsher on Henderson than I think the wisdom of the crowd thought might be possible, because Sonny Michel is a legitimate threat to take work. They've already been talking about him being a lead back. There's already been debates then about what does lead back mean. I think lead back means Sonny Michel is going to have more rush attempts, but I think Henderson's going to have far more targets and have plenty of rush attempts as well. He drops into the running back like 25, 27 range for me, and Sonny is down in the 30, 35 range for me. You can look up those exact details in the Singularity tonight. But that's where I'm at. So hopefully you didn't overdraft Daryl Henderson when he was like an RB 20, 18. I do think that James Robinson, again, people are going to be slow to react. That's how we started talking about this. So you go ahead and keep smashing James Robinson when you get to like the running back 14, 15 range. He's going to be a great value. And I actually had to update, you know, what we're talking about here as far as values in a minute from where I had him, but he's still going to be a value. So that's what I want to talk about. We are going to get into one other thing before, and this has to do with preseason and reactions, and similar to the whole thing about, you know, Daryl Henderson and his value. Similarly, after the Sonny Michel trade, Damian Harris, people are excited about Damian Harris. It doesn't change much for me for Damian Harris. I think he gets about, I don't know, half a carry per game more in my projections. Most of them I gave to actually Ramondre Stevenson. He changes the most, actually. He benefits the most from Sonny Michel's departure. But I already liked Damian Harris. I already had him higher than ADP. And now that value is going to pretty much go away because now people are paying attention to him again. And they already should have been. And that is the theme right now. We are completely in the adjust to something that you should have already known and adjusted to season. I'm not very good at hashtags. Sorry. So basically, there's so many things going on right now that we're reacting to. And most of them are things that if we had really stopped and thought about, we already could have figured out. And we already could have and should have adjusted for it and ranked them accordingly. And the rest of it is stuff that we should not actually be reacting to or change anything because of. So the greatest example I saw of this was a tweet by Dave Kluge, at Dave Kluge, saying, "Oh, we say we don't overreact, but let's be honest, we all do it." Well, I don't know, Dave. Maybe we don't. And he gave some examples and asked, you know, what have you changed? And the following comment thread was just a massive example of bad process and what not to do. I'm not trying to be mean saying that. I would encourage everyone who was a part of it to go back and look at the examples they gave and ask themselves if they could have known that already. And let's go over some of them. I'm not going to name names. No, I made a list of them, of the players, and we'll talk about them. We'll hit on them real quick. A lot of the players that were named more than once in this thread. Popular thread, a lot of people responded. So, Philip Lindsay was actually one that Dave gave. So I am naming names here, but he gave Philip Lindsay. And guess what, guys? We've been talking about Philip Lindsay as a value already. Nothing changed. He was already a value. I was already saying, oh yeah, you should be going and getting him. In fact, at the FF Expo a couple weekends ago, I actually listened to Fabiano name Philip Lindsay as a sleeper. Okay, that was already a couple weeks ago. before any of these games we saw Philip Lindsay in. I guess there were some games that weekend, but anyway, we should have known, all right? That's one we should have known. Now let's talk about Zach Wilson. Oh, he's looking so good. Well, that's because they're leaving their starters out there longer than the teams are playing, the defenses they're playing against. And it's just preseason. I don't know. Maybe we shouldn't get so excited just because he looks good in preseason. So you shouldn't be reacting to that. You should be really careful about reacting to people looking good. There's also been a lot of reaction to Jakobi Meyers got mentioned all the time. And you know I've been talking about this one, about how frustrating it was to hear people talk about the Patriots and list Patriot receivers and even list Kendrick Bourne and not name Jakobi Meyers at all. Not at all. They didn't say his name at all. He's the wide receiver for the Patriots. How can you list wide receivers for the Patriots and not list the wide receiver one? He is the wide receiver one the entire time. In volume, I will say, because I do have Aguilar, I think, scoring more because of touchdowns, and they're similar in volume, but Meyers has more receptions because of his role. So whether that makes him the one or the two, I don't know. I go by receptions when it comes to wide receiver one, or at least targets. So either way, he needs to be in the conversation. Always, the entire time, since the end of last season. If you could just look up some stats, look at his game log, you would know that he's not just nothing. All right? They didn't bring anything in good enough to replace him. All right. Sterling Shepard being brought in as, I guess he made some plays. I don't know. Yeah, he's the Golladay pivot. Well, yeah, he has been. And I guess there's some debate between him or Darius Slayton. But historically, between the two of them, Shepard has been the guy. So it makes sense to, after Golladay, if you're not confident on Golladay even playing, let alone playing well, Sterling Shepard is the pivot. Yes, we know. Michael Carter falling. Oh, they're worried now about Michael Carter. Maybe he's not the starter. Of course he's not going to be the full-time starter. He's an undersized, later, mid-round drafted running back. They've been telling us in actions and words that this will be a running back by committee in New York. And people are finally starting to figure this out, and so he's falling. Well, maybe you shouldn't have had him so high in the first place. Okay? Giovanni Bernard, everyone's all getting excited about it now. Yeah. Yes, we knew this. Tyler Boyd rebounding because of the Jamar Chase drops and fears. His value then went down, which also, it went down to where it should have been all along, basically. It was way too high. And so many of these things are just adjustments back to where it should have been. Boyd rebounding in value because of Chase fears. Really, those are just two different players moving close to where they should have been all along. Rondale Moore. Oh, wow, he looked really good. Yeah. Look, and then not only that did they mention Rondale Moore, they mentioned that they were really scared for Rondale Moore because of the lack of success with Isabella and other receivers Arizona's drafted lately. If your process had Isabella in the same universe as Rondale, so that you would be worried about Rondale because of an Isabella failure, you need to improve your wide receiver process, because your rookie wide receiver process, because they were not even close prospects. And so just because Isabella failed doesn't have anything to do with Rondale Moore. You should have always looked at his profile and been excited. AJ Green, people getting all excited about him. This is when you should not be adjusting to. Don't get sucked back in, guys. He's done. He's going to have some big spike games, so maybe in a best ball or something, but it's just always going to be enough to lure you in and then let you down. Don't do it. All right, that's one of the costly mistakes. There you go. Gave you one early. Don't do it, okay? Another one on this list. They were fading Gainwell. Yes, that's because you have Miles Sanders too low, most likely. Miles Sanders is a borderline running back one where he's been for the past two seasons. You just got too excited after his rookie year and drafted him and traded for him too high. And now after a disappointing year where he actually had better per game numbers, you're dropping him further down than he should be. You don't make sense, guys. Not you, the listeners. You know. You know what I'm talking about. Jalen Reagor, oh, he made some plays. We're back on him. Well, if you're willing to get back on him, you should have been making that move 2 months ago. Because whether or not it works has nothing to do with whether he's making a couple of catches in preseason. Nothing to do with it. Corey Davis, I like the value. I agree. But he's playing, again, deep into preseason games because they want him playing with Wilson. That's a good thing. That is a good thing.
That's a good thing.
But Elijah Moore is not there due to injury. He's coming back. So there's a lot of things there. In fact, I didn't even get a chance to play it. I'll have to go back and check me on Twitter at FusionFFB to see if I have any comments. But I know the Jets did play. I missed the beginning of it. I don't even know if Elijah played at all. Hopefully he did. Hopefully that brings the Corey Davis hype under check a little bit. I like Corey Davis. Don't get me wrong. It just seemed, again, overinflating the preseason games when you have your ones playing deeper into the game than the opponent. That's all it is. And maybe that's not all it is, but that's most of it. Okay? All right. So, again, don't adjust things. Oh, don't double count either, because now what I hear about is news about Swift being reported about his injury and how he may not be ready for week one. We knew this days ago, weeks ago. We knew about his injury a couple weeks ago. If you are moving him down further because of timeline confirmation, when that timeline was the timeline, possible timeline all along, you are double counting the negative. You are moving him down twice for the same thing. It's a bad process. Don't do it. Next topic already. Okay. High ground draft strategy. We talked about it. We want to do it. We've been practicing it. Have the article, right? Now you have the draft guide that'll help you do that. I mean, not directly, but the information is there. The draft assistant does help you do that. I don't know if you put that together, but the way that a draft assistant is designed is it gives you the top players at each position, regardless of overall ADP. So if you really want to hammer one position, you can make sure that you're still getting a value on that position within the position, regardless of overall ADP, round, and so on. So if you really want to just keep hitting those wide receivers, it'll help you make sure you're getting the wide receiver that's going to finish higher than their drafted positional rank. All right. You know, wide receiver 20, and you're getting somebody who can score wide receiver 16 like points, and that's a value. Okay. So for the 20th wide receiver off the board, you're getting somebody who can score wide receiver 15, 16 points, right? That's what I'm talking about. And that's what the draft assistant helps you do in real time, you know, changing the values as you input the picks. The draft guide will help you do a very similar thing, but just you have to follow it and scratch off the names and so on. Okay. I want to approach this whole concept now a little different because of high ground. So instead of, I've done articles for years now that I don't know if I have the time to do. I might actually have the time to do because I'm kind of like holed up in my office here for the weekend. So maybe I have time to write an article. I don't know. But I've written it for 2-3 years about how to draft from different positions in the draft. You know, if you're at the turn, if you're in the middle, and then I'll made some other names for the other positions. The whiplash, which is right next to the turn, and the quarter post, which is just like, you know, one quarter in there next to the middle, but you're not the middle, right? You know what I'm talking about? Like the five spot. You're like, well, I'm not close to the end, but I'm not really in the middle either. Yeah, those guys. So there's always things to be aware of, strategies to talk about when we talk about those things that I always really emphasize. And I'll probably, if I do write an article, what I'll be doing is a little bit more of a stripped down just theory version, and less, because what I would do is I would get into how that actually applies in the top rounds to the players. And that really was, I think, tedious to write, probably tedious to read, and I don't know how much it actually helped with the specific players. So what I'm hoping to do is, now that I've provided you with these wonderful tools in the Singularity, is that you can use those and combine it with the theory I'm talking about in the articles and come to the exact same conclusions. So we're going to talk about players at each position who are going to help you at different points in the draft according to High Ground. And I kind of outlined this with a little bit of like you're building a fort or something. So we've got foundations being your top picks, right? And it doesn't mean it has to be first rounder pick. It just means if you're going to make one of these positions your high ground, you want to make sure you've got some of these guys, all right? You want someone in this tier if you are going to make this a high ground, at least your first high ground, okay? You can't delay too long to take a player that's going to be in your main high ground at a position, because you're going to miss out with the top guys. And now you're just going to be creating a bunch of decent guys instead of having a dominant, you know, the best at that position in the entire draft. So you have to take them. You typically first or second round guys are the foundation guys we're talking about here. It's a little bit different for tight end. Unless you're in tight end premium, then it's the same. But if it's just regular scoring tight end, you can just kind of dial that down, you know, proportionately, a couple rounds here and there. We'll get to it when we talk about him. So first of all, if you are hitting quarterback as your high ground, then I'm going to give you some values for your guys, but also these are values if you want to wait till your second round, basically. If you want to take that running back or that tight end or even a wide receiver, depending on your scoring, in the first round, maybe you're at the end and you get a Davante Adams, right? If you want to take one of them before moving to quarterback in like a super flex league, you're going to be wanting to look for Tom Brady and Ryan Tannehill. These are the guys who have a chance to be up in not just the top 10, but in the top 6. And they're going to be just solid players for you. Again, depends on scoring, but these are after the top tier, and there's about 6 to 7 top tier quarterbacks. And if you want them to be your real high ground, feel free to draft them in, you know, the first round in super flex. So that's why I'm not listing them. I'm listing the values that are still foundational players. Those players are obviously foundational quarterback players. I'm trying to give you who will be value foundational players. Or at each of these categories, that's what we're going to be talking about. So the obvious guys, not talking about them. I'm talking about the values you can get that'll still do the job. So for running backs, foundational running backs, there's all the top guys, obviously. But then you should be going after Aaron Jones. I have him running back 5, which is 5 higher than ADP running back 10. So this is absolutely a player you can grab who I think has the opportunity and the talent to match anyone in the top. And you're getting him at the end of that tier. You're getting him around the first, second turn, even late into the second, okay? Depending, it's catching up a little bit in redraft. The dynasty ADP was kind of holding him down for a while there. That's gone now. We're full on redraft. So Aaron Jones, he's still a value though, anywhere around the first, second turn, anywhere close to that. Okay. Absolutely. I would be happy to take Aaron Jones, and then someone else is my running back high ground. Jonathan Taylor could be that somebody else. Sometimes he goes before Aaron Jones. According to ADP, he does. I would take Aaron Jones before him. But he's not so much of a value, but I do think there is possibility of a wide range of values on him. So I wanted to make sure I mentioned him here. He is just right at his ADP, still a value because of his upside. Great upside. And solid floor. Beautiful, like consistent, you know he's going to be getting some work there. The question is can he maintain the target volume, and you know, can that offense maintain him, and just so on. So some questions, but you know he's getting work. If everything goes his way, he has top three ceiling, okay? And then the last one, actually a couple more. DeAndre Swift, you know I love him, and I have him 8 higher in the position than others. I might need to change that. I'm going to be going over all the projections, but I doubt it's going to change more than a couple. So he's way higher. I have him a top 10 running back, and I get it. It's high. A lot of people think that's high. I don't think it's that high for the kind of work he gets. That's just the way PPR works. If you're in standard, I hate calling it standard. If you're in non-PPR leagues, okay, don't draft Swift that high, of course. But that's why you want to check the tools I'm giving you and the custom scoring, and that's going to fill in all the little exceptions like this for you. And the last one is Antonio Gibson, also really going right at value, I think, similar to Jonathan Taylor, but again, high upside that I think makes him worth it at cost. All right, so I just wanted to mention him. So sometimes there's players that we're afraid of taking. We always want the value. Sometimes you just need to take a guy at cost. It's okay, as long as he has that upside, and he does. Wide receivers, Calvin Ridley. He can be wide receiver 1 overall this year, and you can get him at wide receiver, 5 ADP value. So he's a great value, a great guy to get in the second round. You know, you got that running back or that in super flex, the quarterback, or in tight end premium, maybe you get like a Kelsey or somebody. We'll talk about that though. You get that in the first round, you come around the second round, even late into the mid picks, and you can still get Calvin Ridley. Fantastic, right? Has every bit of much of the upside as Diggs and Hill, right? Every bit with the volume and his touchdowns. Even if I don't like Atlanta that much, he's still good. Allen Robinson, a little bit behind that. And DeAndre Hopkins sometimes falls. So those are guys you're keeping an eye on, that if you grabbed, you know, that anchor, hero running back in the first round, and now you're flipping to wide receivers as your high ground, these are the guys you want as your wide receiver ones without having to pay the first round or early second round value. Okay, these are the guys you can get and be very happy and confident with them as your wide receiver 1. Tight end, Waller first always, and then Kittle. It's not an injury concern so much for Kittle. I mean, it's there, but more so concerned about volume and just things like that. So Waller, on the other hand, more work, a bigger share of the pie than even Travis Kelce. If that offense improves, it's only better for Darren Waller. He's amazing. Smash him in the third rounds. And in tight end premiums, you're definitely looking at him in the second round as well. The interesting thing about a tight end high ground is just by getting one of these top three guys, you kind of got the high ground, especially in a premium, because it just exaggerates their value at the top. And that's what the elite tight end, you know, drafters are talking about. And I get it when it comes to these top guys, but I don't know that you typically gain a high ground at tight end by going after volume, but just because there's so few of them at the top, just by taking one, you've already created scarcity and you're already better. You may not have the best. Hopefully, you can do that in a different position. But you have one of the best. You have a top three tight end starter, as long as you get one of these top three guys. And so that means now you can focus on a different hill, a different position, and make that the best one in the entire league. And now you have the best in one position and a top three in tight end. That's what we're going for. Remember, we're going for the best position and one position coming out of the draft, and then a top position group at another position as well. And to clearly have the worst at another position. I mean, it doesn't have to be the worst. Sometimes the other drafters in your draft just insist on somehow being worse. It happens, but you shouldn't have been spending a bunch on it to make it happen. So those are the foundational players. If you were going to make these your higher ground, again, with tight ends, it can just be one of them. But if this is going to be the first of a few players at this position that's going to be your high ground, these are values you can still get and be happy with and still build upon, okay? Mistakes in this category are going to be guys like Derrick Henry. His volume and everything was crazy last year. He doesn't get the PPR receiving points, and I think there's a good chance that the passing game continues to expand, continues to develop and grow, which only makes sense as Derrick Henry gets older, because they know he's getting older and they know they won't be able to rely on him forever. And so that's going to shift to the passing game naturally, unless they just, you know, find the next Derrick Henry, which, I mean, there's not another Derrick Henry. There just isn't. He's hardly human. So that's why I'm a little worried about Derrick Henry at cost in these top rounds, first round. And similarly with Najee Harris, I think he's going to end up as the inefficient volume guy. And we saw James Robinson pull that off last year. But we also saw David Montgomery pull it off against just an easy schedule. And the Steelers don't have that easy a schedule. And their team's not, offensive line is not that great. And they have players to throw the ball to, unlike the Bears with David Montgomery. So just, it's an all-around bad situation. He's going to get a ton of volume. He really is. If he can handle it and be more efficient with it, he can do very well. I just think right now you're paying too much for what you're going to get. All right. Fortifications is the next group. So now we're talking about guys in the third, fourth round, guys that are going to be their second player on your hill, your high ground. Again, quarterbacks, Kirk Cousins, Matthew Stafford, great options in this area, top 10 potential that you don't have to pay anywhere close to the same cost. Running back, Austin Eckler, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Miles Sanders. And if Najee Harris, you know, if your league is wary of rookies, maybe he falls into this area. And then I think he's actually a value. He's a value when he falls into this range, but he's a mistake if you take him in the first two rounds. Do you see the difference? It's not about the player. It's about the risk and the reward and what you have to pay for it. He's going to get the volume, and so that's worth a chance if he's your second running back. Wide receivers, you got Robert Woods. Love him much higher than ADP. Amari Cooper. These guys, oh man, this is a fantastic group of wide receivers. Tyler Lockett, Terry McLaurin. Really, Terry McLaurin is at cost right now, but similar like when we talked about the running backs, his upside is there, so I'm okay paying it, but he's last on this list. I kind of have the list in order of Woods, Amari, and Lockett. I love Lockett, but Woods and Amari have the opportunity to be the number one in their team. Lockett is not going to overtake DK Metcalf in priority. It's conceivable he has more targets and receptions than Metcalf by the end of the season, but I don't know how that looks or if it's very assured. I think it's more assured for the other guys. And finally, if you're in a tight end premium, of course, premium, Mark Andrews falling into the third, fourth rounds. But if it was a regular, now we're talking more like sixth, seventh rounds. If Mark Andrews is still there, I typically don't go after the middle guys, but he has the volume and the history of producing that makes him worth it. More so even than like TJ Hockenson, because it's a new offense there. And I know people hate to hear you say you take Mark Andrews over TJ Hockenson. Josh, don't you know TJ Hockenson's going to lead the team in targets? Well, Mark Andrews could too, especially if all these receivers are hurt. If Mark Andrews is out there playing week one and Brown and Bateman are not, I would not be surprised if Mark Andrews leads the Ravens in targets. So how is that different? It's not. It's not. In this range, mistakes, I believe, taking someone like Brandon Ayuk over the guys I named is a mistake. I know he looked really good last year, especially second half of the season, but that's also when so many of the other options, the other receivers, Debo was trying to come back, he was in and out, and then, of course, Kittle was hurt, so I struggle to see him as being a top priority. He's definitely the second and maybe even the third. And I just fear he's not going to exactly return. He can still be very good. It just might look more like wide receiver 24 than wide receiver 16, which is more the range of the Woods, Amari, Lockett, McLaurin. Someone else running back sometimes is kind of in this area is Leonard Fournette. I do think Wisdom of the Crowd is kind of exposed to that. But I'm afraid that he's kind of the tweener in that situation, with meaning Gio is the receiving guy, running back on the ground, running back is Ronald Jones, and Leonard Fournette's just kind of in there in between. He was getting work over Ronald Jones last year because he could actually catch, but now they have Gio to do that, so tweener. You don't want tweeners. Kyle Pitts, tight end. If you're taking him where he's going at ADP, you're paying too much. And you're putting your team in serious jeopardy due to the lost in opportunity cost of who you could have gotten. And yeah, it's just really dangerous game, taking Kyle Pitts too high. All right, so now we'll go into the next category. I'm going to call these guys the reinforcements, right? So we got quarterbacks. This is going into sixth, seventh round. Of course, talking super flex when we talk quarterbacks. So Tua and Derek Carr are here, and they're two guys who have really, I think, high potential. Tua has really been showing out pretty good. Again, should have already had him there, and I did. So it's just confirming. It's nice to see it. It is nice to see it, but it's just confirming what we already had, which is that he's a full 2 years removed from injury now. He's going to be more comfortable running the ball, more comfortable pushing the ball down the field, and not just scared and dinking and dunk it like it did last year. So running backs, if somehow Mixon has fallen below those other guys, obviously take him. I have to mention it. Usually he doesn't. Chris Carson is perfect in this area after you get past the other ones I named, right? Javonte Williams, if he's your third running back, is a great guy to take on. The upside there is beautiful. Josh Jacobs should not be able to be a running back three for a fantasy team, but here we are. And I'll take that. I'll absolutely take that. Robbie Anderson, wide receivers, Robbie Anderson, Laviska Shenault, Brandon Cooks, Michael Gallup, Debo Samuel, and Antonio Brown. Those are the guys in this area. Really like them. A lot of upside in this group. A lot of uncertainty that's bringing their volume, their ADP down. We don't know if Laviska is going to beat out DJ Chark. We don't know how Donald's going to do with Robbie and DJ Moore. We don't know even who's going to be the quarterback for the Houston Texans. And we kind of doubt that Gallup can return to form and beat out or get anywhere close to Cooper and Lamb, right? Debo, all of these guys have their doubts, and that's why they're such great values. TJ Hockenson, if he falls in this area, is a value that I would take. All right. Mistakes in this area, Devonta Smith. He should not be going ahead of Robbie Anderson, all those guys I named. He should not be. He has the upside. I get it. Not going to dig on too much. I just think it's overpaying, and it's going to be a mistake. He's not going to give you what you want week in, week out. Logan Thomas, similarly, although his ADP has fallen a little bit, but if he's still in this kind of range, comparatively, whether it's a couple of later rounds from where I was talking, or if it's tight end premium, it would be right here in the 6-7 range. I do really like Logan Thomas. I just don't think he's going to be as high volume as he was last year. He was really low in efficiency. He was the only guy, essentially. You had an injured Terry McLaurin out there, and then you had Alex Smith throwing the ball short to Logan Thomas. So a lot of what we saw production points-wise, numbers-wise, for him last year just comes back to that, and I don't really trust it to carry over with Fitzpatrick and new receivers there. I don't trust it. Okay, so now we're on to the next area. We're starting to get much later, and then we're kind of call in the cavalry, who, I mean, they're going to come in and save the day. So these are guys, look, you've gone after your high ground. You have your 1, 2, and 3 at whatever you need. Now you need to start looking at the position that was your weakness, or even pivot into your second strength. For some of these, you can still do that. But maybe you really need somebody. And at quarterback, that's going to be Daniel Jones, Fitzpatrick, I just mentioned, and even maybe Sam Darnold. But I really like the upside plays of Daniel Jones and Fitzpatrick. You're waiting this long, so take the upside so that if they hit, they're right up there with the guys I mentioned before. At a discount, though. Running back, Myles Gaskin, Mike Davis, Damian Harris. That's who I got in this area. I had James Robinson. He was supposed to actually be moved up, so he would have been right there ahead of Mixon, and even kind of borderline between the fortifications and the reinforcements, because I would take him before I would take Miles Sanders, before I would take Eckler. That's close. That's really close. But that's right where I take James Robinson. I want to get him at value, but I don't want to wait too long. I want to just, you know, get him because he's going to be good, even at a little bit of a value. All right, so the wide receivers as cavalry guys, these are guys that even if they're your first or second at the position, they're still helping you out. Marvin Jones, the old guys here, T.Y. Hilton, and Michael Thomas. He's not on the list to be this is not the guy who's going to bail you out for waiting on wide receiver. But this is going to be a guy who, if wide receivers are your strength, your high ground, it's really sneaky to take Michael Thomas because you already have wide receivers covered and they're really good. But they could be really, really good if Michael Thomas comes back. And so now you've really set the bar high as far as your potential. Tight ends, Rob Tonyan. And Dallas Goedert. Goddard's value has slipped now because people are more and more concerned about Ertz actually being there. I always thought Ertz was going to be there, and I still was high on Dallas Goedert because he's good. It was too high, but I am actually happy to get him at a value now. I avoid the mid-round tight ends, but Goddard, if he falls a little bit more, I will be considering him. And same goes for Tonyan. I know crazy efficient last year with touchdowns, lower targets, but that can grow, especially with what he did last year. I could easily see that continue to grow. Mistakes in this area, lots of them actually. Odell Beckham Jr., people are going to be tempted to take him. Jalen Waddle, Michael Pittman Jr., people are going to be really tempted to go after these guys, and I think it's a mistake. I have T.Y. Hilton in this cavalry group as a value, and his teammate Pittman, who often gets taken before him, is the mistake. And then we have Gronk and Jared Cook. Jared Cook, I don't trust him all, and I think Donald Parham kind of takes over the receiving role more than Cook by the end of the season. And Gronk, everyone's like, well, Gronk's healthy. I don't know. Really, is he? Are we sure? I just think there's other talents on that team at wide receiver and tight end. And you don't know when you're going to get the touchdown game. It's just a losing proposition. You'd be better off waiting for the next group of guys. And these are conscripts. These are guys you're just getting super cheap, right? You're just picking them up off the side of the road. Quarterbacks, Cam Newton, Big Ben, and Drew Lock. I'm going to take that Drew Lock one out of them because we did just hear today that Teddy Bridgewater is the starter. Really a little bit disappointed in Lock. Disappointed in the Broncos. It seems like the really safe move to go with Teddy Bridgewater. And I wonder if with the talent they have at wide receiver, they couldn't have done something more with Drew Lock. I would have liked to see him, and we probably still will. Running backs, James Conner. My goodness, this kind of value on James Conner. People are acting like Chase Edmonds is the lead back. I don't see it. I don't think he is. I think it's Connor. David Johnson is going extremely late. He could bail you out. You need somebody to start, right? And then you've got the 49er running backs, both Mostert and Trey Sermon. Yeah, sure. Pick them up on a value. Naheem Hines and PPR, same for Tony Pollard. These are really two similar kind of guys that were hopefully, in Pollard's case, but definitely in Hines' case, getting targets, getting involved in the passing game. And so that's super valuable as a guy, if you're going more of the zero running back kind of build, that you can just get these guys later in the draft, get them in there, get them in your required, just your one or two required running back spots, and they're getting something, okay? Wide receivers, we talked about him already, Rondale Moore. He is, actually, I have both of Moores here, Rondale Moore, Elijah Moore, Also, Rashad Bateman. So we get a bunch of the rookie wide receivers here. This, now you're into the double digit rounds and you want guys that are going to be values if they hit. And so that's why you want these guys. I already had Marquez Callaway on this list. I've had him on the list. I've liked him since last year. And unfortunately, his value's kind of gone up. So I don't know if you can still get him, but he still falls through the cracks in some drafts. And Russell Gage is kind of the other. He's the guy who's falling through the cracks right now. And a lot of people, I don't know why, suddenly started not liking him or something, but he's perfectly fine. He got a volume that can easily make him fantasy relevant. Over 100 targets last year. And that was with Julio coming in and out. He's the wide receiver too, for sure. I see another 100 plus targets. This is a good volume for a wide receiver. You can get late, a lot of potential there. Tight end, these are the three guys late. I'm hidden. We're talking, again, if it's non-tight end premium, we got to bump this down a couple of rounds from what we were even talking. And we're talking 12th, 13th, 14th, the last guy you take before kicker and defense if you're in those leagues. Okay. We got Evan Ingram. Right, Austin Hooper, Hayden Hurst, these are all being undervalued and all can score points week in and week out for your team. Mistakes around this area, there's not a lot. I would say beware, and he could have even been in the earlier group, but beware Curtis Samuel. I just don't like the feeling about that one. I would consider Dyami Brown, keep tabs on him as a waiver pickup. I bet Dyami Brown is going to show up in next week tonight pretty soon. Curtis Samuel, first of all, he's been hurt throughout the camp. And also, he's back with Rivera, who just didn't use him properly. He had his best year after Rivera left Carolina. And so, yeah, I know that they like each other, or at least Rivera likes him. but he can't like him that much because he's not using him correctly. So I'd just fade Curtis Samuel at this point. All right. Hey, that's it. We're a little bit over an hour. It has so much in this episode. I'll see if I can even get timestamps in here. So, well done, Joshua, telling them at the end of the podcast that there's timestamps that they could have skipped ahead. But if you want to go back again and hear something about a certain take or topic, there you go. You hit them. Lastly, I just wanted to talk about something. I'm going to get off topic a little bit. I'm not going to dive into it as much. Clock Dodgers, Neil over there did a nice episode talking about cancel culture. And I just one thing I did want to talk about with it is just consider and reflect on whether we are judging people by the same measure, by the same standard by which you would be willing to have others judge you, you know? And so if you're not willing to give someone the benefit of the doubt or give them an opportunity to repent and to change, to learn, to improve, if you're not giving them that, would you want that for you? Because we all mess up, we all make mistakes, and just my overall worldview, not to get too deep, but I see a lot more of a blur between quote-unquote good people, bad people. You know, there's the old saying, there goes I, but for the grace of God. When you see somebody who's obviously either making bad choices or has it rough, and that really accurately describes how I feel. It could very easily be any one of us making those decisions, and to think that it couldn't be is, I think, a little bit prideful, a little self-righteous, and not extending forgiveness to people is very dangerous because you're setting yourself up to not be forgiven, and just overall, just not a good attitude. So this isn't a defense of people who have done and said things that have gotten canceled. This isn't a defense saying it's not a big deal and they don't need to have consequences or they don't need to accept responsibility or apologize or anything like that. It's more about how we're going to treat them. Are we going to completely cut them out of our lives now? I'm sorry, but the list of things that I will cut somebody out of my life entirely, especially if it's something that was done before I really knew them, is a very short list. It's a very short list. And I would encourage people to really consider that too. What things could you do that you would be understanding of your friends just refusing to be friends with you anymore? And make sure that that list reflects the list of things that you're cutting others off for. That's it. It's kind of an extension of Golden Rule, do unto others, but it actually comes out of Matthew chapter 7, talking about you'll be judged by the measure with which you judge others. And I'm not trying to get theological or anything, but just talking about this world and other people, it's going to happen to you if you do it to others. So just be careful with that. That's supposed to be a positive note. I mean, I'm sorry if I made it come off dark, but be forgiving. Forgiving is positive. It's a good thing. It's a good attitude. It's good for your health. It really is. So Twitter's been a little weird lately. I hate this time of year, honestly. My favorite time of the year is off season almost. We just need games to be played. Be sure to check in next week for next week tonight. Maybe I should just call it week two. Because it really is week two, but we're going to be talking about and projecting what happens in week one and then how to react to it for week two. So yeah, next week, tonight, week two, next Thursday, or no, Friday. Yeah, it'll be Friday. Eventually that'll be shifting to me recording Thursdays, but that may still end up being released on Friday nights. We'll see how it is. Most likely that's what's going to happen. Thursday night's going to be my night to do all the work. And then Friday night I have a chance to finish up any editing and put it out. So I would love to have that even set up as a follow me on YouTube. Look for Fusion Fantasy Football. If I could have that as a scheduled premiere release at 9 o'clock Eastern every Friday night, probably more like 10 o'clock, but that would be pretty cool. So keep an eye out for that. I do want to be doing video versions. There will be audio version as well, of course, but the video will just be visual aids with the players listed and so on. You won't lose much in the audio. So excited to go into the season, because again, I'm going into the season after this. I'm doing final updates on the Singularity, and I am moving right into examining the matchups from week one and looking into who you're going to want for week two before they've even played week one, because that's what Next Week Tonight does. Hope you're with me. I hope you've been with me, and I hope you, if you haven't been, I'm glad you found us. We try to keep you ahead of the competition, step ahead of the curve, however you want to say it, one step ahead, a week ahead, whatever you want to say. That's what we're doing. Just like when, and again, this is in the same spirit of earlier when we were talking about the takes that you should have already known. Again, we're already there. We're already ahead of the game by just being consistent with our process, following through, thinking through these takes, and arriving at these conclusions before we have to see it, before we have to have confirmation, willing to go out on a limb. That's a lot of Next Week Tonight, is willing to go out on a limb. There's going to be times the limb breaks and it's a big crash, but there's going to be a lot of times that it pays off, and just a couple pays offs are worth all of the failures. And that's the important thing to remember. It's easy to get discouraged if I look at like percentages or something, but in Next Week Tonight and going after these guys, it's important to remember that if you wasted a pickup on a player, a roster spot on a player of a weekend, and it doesn't work out, you can just drop him again. But if you picked him up and he hits, then I mean, you're good for the year. You've got Chase Claypool, right? You've got Antonio Gibson, whatever it is. And it's not just waiver pickups. We talk about trades as well. So Antonio Gibson was a guy week two, I was saying, go out and trade for him. The window is disappearing very quickly. And within a couple weeks, there he went. He would never fell below a certain point level, and of course for cost. And he never had a chance of getting him cheap again. I kind of got lucky on Claypool, but I get lucky on a decent number of guys. And so how much of it is actually luck? How much am I good at this? I don't know. Again, half of it I think is just being willing to go out on the limb and take those chances. And that's what's going to help you. That's what's going to help you. And so first, player, I'm going to say it right now, I was going to say it on the first Next Week Tonight, but the first waiver ad, the first trade target for Next Week Tonight, week one, because that's, like I said, that's what we're doing here. The first player on that list, you know who he is. You already knew who I'm talking about. You know who I'm going to say. I'm not even going to say it, but you know who it is. You know you want him. Go get him. Don't listen to ADP. Don't wait and see. Because after you see it, everyone else is going to see it at the same time. You're not special treatment. You're not seeing anything anyone else isn't seeing at this time. Okay? Don't wait. Go get that guy. You know who I'm talking about. Don't wait. Go do it. All right? That's your job. It's your homework for Next Week Tonight, week one, which is the subtitle to this podcast episode. All right, guys. Can't wait. Let's go. Let's do this. Let's have great seasons, great drafts. Use the Singularity. See you next time.